I mentioned one of them, I don't know if it's in Melbourne or somewhere else, I mentioned that I have a book on public speaking. It says you must not. If you want to be a good public speaker, you must not eat cucumbers. And he proves it. He goes through all these. And he says that the cucumber contains this special substance, which has a name, which dilates the pupil of the eye and makes you lose the power. You look very weak then. Whereas you need closed pupils when you speak. And the cucumber will interfere. Now, do I need to read that book and find fault with it? But you have read it. You can perhaps the better will be for you to summarize the proof that he has given. Give it to me and I'll discuss it tomorrow. Would that be nicer?
Yeah, that would be very nice. Because it's important to me, because I'm doing my study in doctorate in this area, because I want to find out whether I am what I call actually detecting the presence of God's Spirit or just a created substance, you know, by God.
Well, look, in that case, since it's your area, it should be easy for you to write on a piece of paper. No matter how long you write it, I'll read it. So you write it, you give it to me, and I'll discuss it tomorrow.
Thank you.
Is that right?
Okay.
Would it be later? Although God doesn't have a voice, he can make a voice just as he'd make matter or manifest a theophany.
Of course, yes. When we say God has no shape, that doesn't mean that he cannot reveal a shape. If he doesn't have a voice, that doesn't mean that he cannot make a voice. The Apostle Paul, on the way to Damascus, heard a voice. Now, you mustn't say that God has a voice and Paul heard it. All you have to say is, Paul heard a voice. Now, God can make an appropriate voice to speak to a child like Samuel, a different kind of voice to speak to Eli, a different kind of voice to speak to a man, different kinds of voice to speak to a woman. We tend to think along the lines of the Ten Commandments, the film, where God says, I am the Lord. Are we supposed to speak at top at 5:30? You are very generous today. Thank you. So, you know, God can. God is not in space, but he can manifest, and he does manifest himself in space. Adam heard the footsteps of God in the Garden of Eden. We mustn't think that he didn't hear anything, or does God have to break the leaves in order to do that? The answer is no, he doesn't. He might not also. He doesn't need to break leaves to make the noise. Somebody else had a question. Yes,
Dr. Sarnes. In the context of seeing, and in the context of what you have said clearly about what is visible, so when we read 1 John 3 verse 2, that we shall see him as he is, we are to take the word see in the sense of just like the angels see him.
Right, yes. So question, the New Testament and the Old Testament speak in human terms. Earth talk, I call them faith. That's the only way human beings will understand. Somebody else had a question.
Dr. Stavronides, the John 4:24 that is translated God is spirit. There's some older translations that say God is a spirit.
Yes, the King James. Yes, thank you. Shall I comment on that now or later?
Well, if I could just add to it.
Yes.
Then that's a significant difference.
It is.
Now, if we compare that statement, or two statements there, with the angels as spirits, can we then look at angels as just theophanies of God who is spirit?
The answer to that last point is no. I can explain that when we come to that side. Let me write that on the board so we won't forget it. Angels as theophanies. I know you cannot read it that far, but you know, this is so, if I write small letters, we can fill the board up. Now, when he says God is spirit and God is a spirit, when we say, here is, if I say this is a man, when I say this is a man, I understand this to mean that is there's this also is a man, and this also is a man. So the word a shows that it's one of many. One of many. But if I say, in other words, if I say this is a spirit, that means, that suggests that it's one of many. There's another spirit, and another spirit. And one of those is God. That's not what I want to say. That scripture does not say that. It says God is spirit, meaning his essence. That's how he, what he is. He is his nature, in other words, his spirit. It is not discussing what he is in terms of one of many. One of many what? He is a spirit. You are a human being, I am a human being. Because there are, where the word a, in other words, is used as an indefinite article, meaning one of many. As this, to distinguish it from the definite article, which means the specific one we have in mind, not denying the choice. So in Greek, there is no definite article. In that particular verse, there is no indefinite article. It does not say God is a spirit. It says God is spirit. That means God is not flesh and blood and so on. So that is an important point, because we need to deny. Here's what's wrong with this. God is a spirit gives the impression that spirits can be separate, that God is up to here, that's one of them, stops there, and here begins another one, and he stops there, and here begins another one, and he stops there. These are all finite. So the presence of the word a suggests finitude, a finite state, limited, a limitation. And that's not true of God or of the angels. The angels are not like that. We have one more question, but then I also want to finish this point before we leave. At least I finished the first point. I must finish the first point before we go. Yes.
Would it be accurate and helpful to describe God as existence personified? Or is there a logical flaw with that?
Yes, there is a flaw in that. Personified means made into a person, with a persona. God personified, meaning God with a persona. Is he existence with a person, with a mask on? With a mask on.
With a personality, with a being that is suggestive of a person. Of course, he isn't a person. But that. The reason I ask this is because this gives, in my mind anyway, a framework with which to understand a God who doesn't have a shape, size, but extension, etc. And I'm wondering, would it be wrong of me to describe God that way, or would it be misleading in some way?
I'm tempted to say, no, it would not be wrong, in a negative sense of no. See, what is good for the goose is good for the gander. Because if you can speak in that sort of way, I can speak in that sort of way too. Can we write it down so we can discuss it? I would like to sort of discuss that one in detail to show why that's not so. But in the meantime, perhaps I could finish this one point before they open the doors and drive us out. I have not used the expression spirit body. I do not mean God is a spirit body. Mr. Armstrong used the expression spirit body. And it's important to realize that spirit means no substance, and body means substance. A spirit body means a no non-substance substance. It's a contradiction. So we cannot have contradictions in our talk. In discussing this matter with somebody who said, well, look, I don't really understand it all. I gave him an example. I said, if I ask you to go and buy some eggs from the market, I said, yeah, I like you to buy me some special eggs. They must be hollow on the inside and without a shell on the outside. Then he understood the problem with the contradiction. Because why do I call them eggs? So I'm talking about eggs without any eggness on the inside or eggness on the outside. Now, if he had been quick on the uptake, he would have said, yes, give me the money and I'll go and get them. Maybe I could stop. That's enough on that, on that word, on God is Spirit. If you have questions on that, give them to me. You can write them right now, and then give them to me, and I will address them beginning next time. That's tomorrow afternoon, isn't it? I speak tomorrow afternoon, so I've got time, plenty of time to include them in the discussion.
This is tape number 1, side number 2 of the Worldwide News for Tuesday, September the 22nd, 1992. Sites in the Pacific time zone and Tucson will begin at 10:30 a.m. In the Mountain time zone, the local service will begin at 11:30 a.m. At sites in the Central time zone, services will begin at 12:30, and in the Eastern time zone, services will begin at 1:30. If you are uncertain what time zone your site is in, please consult the map on the back of the housing guide, or see your festival advisor. Sabbath services in Arkansas. Sabbath services in Hot Springs, Arkansas will take place at 3 p.m. October the 10th in the Convention Center at 134 Convention Boulevard. There will be no Sabbath services that day in Little Rock. Students lend helping hands to needy at Foreign Projects by Karen Raingut. Karen Raingut is an Ambassador College senior. Big Sandy. 31 Ambassador College students are spending a year serving on foreign projects sponsored by the Ambassador Foundation. 13 went to Jordan, 9 to Thailand, and 9 to Sri Lanka, according to Joseph Locke, Vice President of Ambassador Foundation International. Daniel Vanderpoel, executive assistant to Mr. Locke, said that those who helped select students for the projects considered whether each student could live in a close environment with other students, be accepting of other cultures, and be a strong example of God's way of life. Ambassador Foundation pays the students' airfare, housing, and food expenses, plus provides each student a monthly allowance. Upon returning to college, the students receive a tuition scholarship. Ambassador Foundation is the corporate entity of the church, chartered to function where the church may not be able to, said Mr. Vanderpoel. The June 16th issue of the Worldwide News featured ambassador students serving on the Thai project. They left Big Sandy May the 24th. Helping disabled in Jordan. Of the 28 who applied for Jordan, 13 were selected. Sophomore Greg Ratke, juniors Josh Baudouin, Jonathan Frankel, Jason McCoy, Daniel Porteous, Lisa Baker, Jolene Brazil, Michelle Pentonac, Karen Quinn, Lisa Soik, Rachel Thomas, and Cheryl Webb, Steve Nixon, Ryan Fusel, and also Mike Smith. The Jordan Project, directed by Corey Erickson, is helping mentally and physically disabled children and adults. The students serve at one of four schools. The Bunyat School is for mentally disabled children. The Sahab Workshop, a school for physically or mentally disabled adults, is a branch of the Bunyat School. The second school is the Al Hussein School for the Physically Handicapped. Students also serve at the Sports Federation for the Handicapped, a school for young adults and teenagers who are physically or mentally disabled. The fourth school is the Noor Al Hussein Foundation, where ambassador students work with mentally disabled students from a variety of backgrounds. Those in Jordan will return the second week in June. Varied curriculum in Sri Lanka. In Nuwara Eliya, Sri Lanka, the students, directed by Dan Thompson, teach at Waterfield Institute, which is on a former tea plantation. Seniors Cheryl Hart, Wendy Kendall, and Christy Quarles were accepted to the project last year, but were unable to go because of difficulties acquiring a visa. They went this year, along with sophomore Joe Piotrowski and juniors Aldo Antoli, Dan Kale, Robert Kendall, Rohan Pools, and Rachel Kershian. Group members teach speech and computer, typing, shorthand, formal grammar, reading, world history, writing with a purpose, business management, accounting, and principles of success. Until December, Waterfield was operated as a two-year program. However, the school was restructured with a one-year curriculum. Want to write to a volunteer? Ambassador College students are serving on Ambassador Foundation projects in Jordan, Sri Lanka, and Thailand. Their mailing addresses are listed below if you would like to write to them. For Jordan, address letters to IMC Jordan Project, Pasadena, California, 91123. May the 1st is the last date to mail letters because students return to the United States in early June of 1993. For Sri Lanka, the address is IMC Sri Lanka Project, Pasadena, California, 91123. June the 1st is the last date to mail letters because students return to the United States in early July of 1993. For Thailand, please see page 6 of the June 16th Worldwide News for their mailing address. Since they are scheduled to return to the United States in April 1993, please post any mail to them by March the 1st, 1993. Mail can be sent to students at all three projects at these addresses. Mail normally takes 2 to 4 weeks to arrive. Please don't send packages because they take longer and may require the receiver to wait several hours at a post office and open the packages for inspection before picking up. Only letters will be forwarded. Q&A from the Pastor General's Report. Question: what tithing principles apply to one who inherits stocks in a company? Answer: there are two basic principles to bear in mind in considering the question of tithing on inherited stocks. First, tithes are paid on earned increase. Second, no tithes are due on an inheritance, for it is not an increase earned by the recipient. Applying these principles, there would be no tithes due on the stock itself at the time it is inherited. However, any earned dividends the stock accrues after the time of inheritance would of course be considered earned increase and would therefore constitute tithable income. There can be extenuating circumstances to this simple application. For example, a husband dies and his will provides for the children to receive the stock, but the wife to receive the dividends. The children are prohibited from selling the stock until the death of his wife, who is probably the mother of the children. In such a case, the wife would not tithe on the dividend she receives, for the dividend itself is intended as her inheritance. Just one more thing. Healing the Generation Gap by Dexter Faulkner. One of my favorite pictures of the fulfillment of God's kingdom on earth is that of peaceful cities where old men and women walk in harmony and young children play peacefully. Where, as the psalmist pictured, one generation shall praise your works to another. Psalm 145, verse 4, New King James throughout. It is good and pleasant for brethren to dwell together in unity, and this is also true across the generations. Yet today, old and young struggle to find anything in common. Why? Divisions between young and old. The generation gap is pretty much a Western problem. Life in many developing countries is much the same for young people today as it was for their elders. The generations in a family are close because they need each other for social well-being and to care for each other. Western nations have a welfare system to deal with this support problem, largely removing the impetus for family involvement. But the division between young and old often goes deeper than that. Different experiences lead to different attitudes. The 20th century has seen many changes. Young people are proficient on computers that would have astonished their parents as children. These differences create a lack of common ground, and the young and old sometimes have nothing to say to one another. In a way, they come from totally different worlds. That is, unless there is a meeting of minds, a sincere communication between the two sides. Harmony in the body. Within the church, whatever our circumstances, God requires reconciliation between different generations and people of different experience. We should not exhibit the alienation between the generations so common in the world around us. This is an important part of our calling. In his first letter to the Corinthians, the Apostle Paul compares church members to a body, where each has his or her own vital function. Paul makes it clear, under God's inspiration, that no part is dispensable, superior, or inferior. Each has a role to play and needs to work in harmony. Now God has set the members, each one of them, in the body, just as He pleased. 1 Corinthians 12, verse 18. This includes young and old. A body in which all the parts work in unison and sympathy with one another is a healthy body. A body in which one part antagonizes another cannot work at full capacity. We should appreciate the particular wisdom, idealism, ideas, originality, experience, and knowledge that each age brings. We can learn valuable lessons from those older or younger than ourselves. Young and old in harmony. The book of Proverbs is full of admonitions for the young man to hear the words of his father or mature persons and be wise. My son, hear the instruction of your father, says King Solomon, and do not forsake the law of your mother. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8. The Bible emphasizes that the younger generation should esteem its elders and be willing to learn from them, ready more than anything else to listen. But the Bible also places a burden of responsibility upon the fathers. They must teach the next generation in love, not in harshness and bitterness. Education must be passed on in an atmosphere of shared experience. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 7. Fathers, the older generation, must not provoke their children to wrath. Ephesians 6, verse 4. The generations must learn to dwell together in unity, peace, and harmony, to praise God's works to the next.
World Watch by Gene H. Hogberg. Europe's past gets lost in Spain's Expo. In many ways, 1992 has been the year of Spain. In serving as host for the Olympic Games, the city of Barcelona and the region of Catalonia made a great impression on people throughout the world. And this year, too, the historic and beautiful city of Seville has served as the site of Expo 92, a six-month-long World's Fair which concludes in October. Spain has also been the host for numerous exhibitions and conferences in connection with the observance of the 500th anniversary of the first voyage of Christopher Columbus to the New World. Taking AVE to the fair. Planning a trip to Europe this summer, my wife Barbara and I decided this would be definitely the time to be in Spain. We arrived in Madrid, the capital, Tuesday, July 14th. We spent that night and the next at the home of Pastor Pedro Rufián, his wife Brigida, and their lively three-year-old son, Pedro. Thursday morning, Mr. Rufián, my wife and I took the new AVE fast train to Seville to attend Expo 92. AVE is the Spanish acronym for the Spanish high-speed train. And it is fast. At one stretch, we were clocked at 330 kilometers an hour, around 200 miles an hour. The former five-hour train trip has been cut nearly in half. The Spanish government is installing a network of the French-built trains called TGV in France between major cities with ultimate links to France and the rest of Europe. The new system symbolizes Spain's commitment to the European Community, EC, which it joined January 1, 1986. Regarding the fair, international exhibitions have a history of being on the cutting edge of futurism. The Seville Exposition was no exception. In fact, it seemed to go a notch further in the high-tech, rapid-fire manner in which information was dispensed at one national pavilion after another. The Israeli pavilion, for example, consisted of little else than a 16-minute multi-carousel slideshow on the history of the Holy Land. What did we learn? Only that this is a part of the world that cannot be compressed into a quarter-hour sound and light show. Even less satisfying was the EC pavilion. After guides rushed us past a few dioramas, not permitting us to pause and reflect on anything, we were herded in front of a bank of about 100 video monitors for a 12-minute video presentation. No audio message accompanied the splashing montage of pictures intended to convey the human diversity of the 12-nation community. And where were the linkages between the EC of today, both to its developmental past and to its intended future? Information overload. In the thought-provoking new book, Technopoly, The Surrender of Culture to Technology, author Neil Postman writes concerning the information overload we experience today. He explains that the tie between information and human purpose has been severed. Information appears indiscriminately in enormous volume and at high speeds, and disconnected from theory, meaning, or purpose. We are a culture consuming itself with information. Together with the advent of the information age, author Postman continues, has been a great corresponding decline of the great narrative of the Bible, which had provided answers to both fundamental and practical questions. The invention and rapid development of the computer, he says, amplifies the contemporary belief that the most serious problems confronting us at both personal and public levels require technical solutions through fast access to information otherwise unavailable. This premise is faulty, Mr. Postman contends. Our most serious problems are not technical, nor do they arise from inadequate information, he says. If families break up, children are mistreated, crime terrorizes a city, education is impotent, it does not happen because of inadequate information. Visit to the Royal Chambers. Considering our experiences at Expo 92, my wife and I were even more grateful that, the day before, Mr. Rufián had taken us to the great royal monastery of El Escorial, not far from Madrid. Construction of El Escorial began in the late 16th century, under the direction of King Philip II, as an appropriate burial place for his father, Charles I, known more widely as Holy Roman Emperor Charles V, and succeeding generations of Spanish royalty. The most impressive part of the enormous complex, the marble-lined subterranean burial chambers, contain nearly all the Habsburg and Bourbon kings, queens, and other members of royalty, beginning with Charles V. Outside the entrance to El Escorial's Basilica is an open area called the Courtyard of the Kings. It is so named because statues of Kings David and Solomon and four subsequent kings of Judah, Jehoshaphat, Hezekiah, Manasseh, and Josiah adorn its facade. El Escorial, one of the world's greatest monuments to kingly rule, truly befits Spain's golden age, when it was the world's leading power. But that is the past. Today, God is calling men and women throughout Spain into His body. Mr. Ruffian serves 130 people, 60 are baptized, and is on the road 10 days out of every month. Church members in Spain share with brethren around the world the same high calling of God. They, too, are part of a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation. 1 Peter 2, verse 9. Being prepared for the return of Jesus Christ to serve with Him as kings and priests. Spain is a nation with a grand regal past. In the person of King Juan Carlos I, it possesses one of the most astute rulers of today. The members in Spain, however, are seeking a different crown, one that will last forever. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 25. In a new golden age to encompass the entire earth. The brethren in Spain, as elsewhere, are acquiring not just the limited knowledge of the physical world in this information age. They are obtaining priceless spiritual understanding and access to the wisdom of God to pursue His way of life. Keeping in mind the statuary above the entrance to the Basilica at El Escorial, they, like all of us, can imbibe of the preserved wisdom of Solomon and follow the example of his father, David, a man after God's own heart. European Diary by John Ross Schroeder. God and Science? Borehamwood, England. A poll in the Daily Telegraph, London, posed this fundamental question. Which one of the following would you ask to explain how life came to exist on Earth? Respondents replied, a biologist, 37%. A historian, 11%. A parent, 6%. A philosopher, 8%. A poet or writer, 1%. A religious leader, 20%. Don't know, 18%. More than a third of Britons believe that a biologist would provide the best answer. Only 20% would turn to a religious leader. By contrast, in the United States, we would find the results quite different. According to the Voice from America column in the British Spectator, the average American thinks that the biblical version of creation is accurate and that the evolutionary theory is fiction. Breaking this result down further, the column goes on to explain that 47% of Americans think God created man in a single day, sometime within the last 10,000 years. Another 40% think human creation occurred in the more distant past, had required a bit of evolution, but had been essentially the work of God. Now notice the difference between Britons and Americans. Only 9% of Americans agree with the teachings of science that man has developed over millions of years from less advanced forms of life without divine assistance. Battle of the Believers. On both sides of the Atlantic, the creationist-evolutionist debate is heating up. A new book disputing Darwinism, The Facts of Life by Richard Milton, is shortly to be published here in Britain. His approach is adversarial. He attacks science. As the book review claims, for a scientist to accept its radical conclusion would be tantamount to asking Christians to abandon the Bible. On the other side of the fence stand the believers in evolution, the vast majority of the whole scientific world. Many see faith as an intellectual weakness. All things to all men. It is a crying shame that humanity's whole approach to life today is adversarial. So often we emphasize our differences, not our common ground, and what we can learn from one another. It rarely occurs to us that each discipline, scientific and otherwise, can contribute valid and valuable incremental parts to answers life's most basic questions and the mystery of existence. Of course, this is not to say that the theory of evolution is true, but science does have a definite contribution to make to our understanding of God's creation. Why aren't we more willing to listen to one another with humility? A biblical understanding need not be threatened by science or any other field of study. Actually, it can and should be enhanced. God's church includes members who are skilled in science. They have come to understand that God is the creator, the greatest physicist, biologist, chemist in the universe. Meaning of life. A second question asked in the Daily Telegraph poll was, people have always asked big questions such as, what is the meaning of life? Do you think scientists are the right people to answer such questions? Respondents replied, yes, 33%, no, 61%, don't know, 6%. David Attenborough, president of British Association Science 92, said, I agree with that majority. By and large, science answers how questions, and religious philosophers deal with why. God is concerned with every aspect of life, with all knowledge, not just with religion. It is God and science, not God versus science.
Iron sharpens iron. Go for the gold. If you fall, Christ will help you back up. By Thomas C. Hansen. American record holder Gail Devers crouched in the starting blocks with other runners in the women's 100-meter hurdles at the Olympics in Barcelona. Between them and the finish line were 10 hurdles. The tension mounted as the starter raised his hand and fired the gun. Gail glided smoothly over each hurdle, coming ever so closely to each one as she raced towards her goal. Gaining an insurmountable lead, she got to the 10th and final hurdle quicker than she ever had before. However, she clipped the final hurdle with the heel of her right foot, lost her balance, and stumbled across the finish line in 5th place. In that race, Gail Devers did not get the gold. In gymnastics, world champion Kim Zmesko rushed herself and fell off the balance beam just 10 seconds into her routine. Kim Zmesko didn't get the gold. Just 16, her brief era is in danger of ending. She spent countless hours of training, and though she has received many other awards, Kim Zmesko did not and probably never will win an Olympic gold medal. Derek Redmond of Great Britain pulled a hamstring in the 400 meters. Millions watched on television as his father helped him across the finish line. Derek Redmond didn't get the gold. If an athlete falls in the Olympics, it is virtually impossible to win a gold medal. A better way. God has a better way. In our Christian lives, we fall many times. Proverbs 24:16 tells us, though a righteous man falls 7 times, he rises again. We can and must get up and go for something far better than an Olympic gold medal, eternal life in God's kingdom. With Christ's help, no matter how many times we fall, Christ will help us get up so we can continue on the path toward eternal life. Only Christ lived a perfect life. We all sin, make mistakes, and fall short in this life. When we are in school, we won't always do well on tests or assignments. In our relationships, we won't always say the right thing. Sometimes people say unkind things to us, and sometimes people are hurt by what we say. If trials knock you down, life has its challenges and trials comparable to the hurdles that Gail Devers faced. Some we may glide over smoothly. Some we will hit and stumble. Some will knock us flat on our backs. But we can still get up and go for the gold. We don't like trials. We'd rather not go through unpleasant circumstances. In the back of our minds, we may know that they are good for us, but it is usually not until the trial is over that we can take comfort. And oftentimes, the trial is easier than the mental anguish we put ourselves through worrying about it. God doesn't always save us from trials, but He always offers us comfort. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. Jeremiah 29, verse 11. God offered hope for Judah at a difficult time. Defeated, they were carried off to Babylon in captivity. However, in verses 5 through 8, God told them to build houses and settle down, plant gardens and eat what they produce, marry and have sons and daughters, find wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage, increase your numbers, don't decrease, seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile, and pray for the city, because if it prospers, you will prosper too. These are all tremendously positive and encouraging statements at a time when Judah was in deep trouble. Even though God had given them strong punishment, He said, I've got plans for you. I want you to prosper. I'm not trying to harm you. I want to give you hope and a future. We sing the song, By the Waters of Babylon, from the church hymnal. In the song, the people ask, could we sing the eternal songs, By the Waters of Babylon? Could they be positive at a time of great trial? I hope we can figuratively sing the eternal songs when we go through times of trouble. We need to have the positive outlook that God asked ancient Judah to have. A better reward. The Olympics has some pretty impressive award ceremonies. To me, one of the most exciting moments in sports would be to enter Olympic Stadium leading the men's marathon with a crowd cheering me to victory. Then to receive the reward, a gold medal, while my country's national anthem was playing. This would be an exciting moment. But again, in God's way of life, our reward is greater. Eternal life in God's kingdom is greater than anything we can imagine, and nothing is worth giving it up for. So, when we stumble, when we fall, let's get up, forget the past, and go for the gold.
Update: news of people, places, and events in the Worldwide Church of God. Longtime minister and manager of Deaf Program retires. Selma Hegvold, age 76, retired August the 17th. Mr. Hegvold and his wife Iris have supervised the church's Deaf Program in Pasadena for the past 12 years. The most enjoyable activity and responsibility of our 32 years in the ministry has been our work in the Deaf Program, said Mr. Hegvold. It has been a wonderful, exciting experience, especially in witnessing the dramatic and miraculous growth. Mr. Hegvold married Iris Koiner April the 4th, 1942, during his military service, and was baptized 10 years later. He later worked as a cabinet maker in the Ambassador College cabinet shop. He was ordained as an elder in 1960 and attended Ambassador College from 1961 to 1966. He was ordained a preaching elder in 1963 and a pastor in 1981. Mr. Hegvold directed the visiting program under evangelist Roderick Meredith from 1960 to 1966, while he pastored the Temple City and Santa Barbara, California churches. He has also served congregations in Vancouver, Washington, Portland, Oregon, Crown Point, Indiana, Hinsdale, Illinois, Chicago, Illinois, Big Sandy, Texas, and Pasadena. Our prayer is for the continuing attention to the deaf and hard of hearing, and all brethren who might otherwise be left out, and for the nurturing of their spiritual growth, said Mr. Hegvold. Ted Landis now directs Deaf and Hard of Hearing Services. Gerald Waterhouse retires. Evangelist Gerald Waterhouse, age 66, retired in August after more than 36 years of faithful service to God's work. After serving in the Navy during World War II, Mr. Waterhouse first heard Herbert W. Armstrong on the radio in 1949. Mr. Waterhouse attended Ambassador College in Pasadena from 1953 to 1956, gave his first sermonette in November 1953, and his first sermon in 1954. Mr. Armstrong ordained him a preaching elder in 1956, a pastor in 1959, and an evangelist in 1963. For many years, Mr. Waterhouse raised up churches in numerous areas and started several international offices of the work. He served in Britain and started the Australian, Philippine, and South African regional offices. Mr. Waterhouse also pastored various U.S. congregations. At Mr. Armstrong's request, Mr. Waterhouse began conducting world tours in 1966. These tours serve to unify the church and keep brethren in outlying areas pointed toward headquarters. He conducted 11 world tours in 25 years. In 1991, he transferred to church administration. We cannot thank Mr. Waterhouse enough for his dedicated and loyal service, said evangelist Joseph Takach Jr. He will be moving to Florida in the near future. He will still be speaking on occasion to the congregations in Florida, and we hope to have him speak in various areas around the world during the holy days. Lecture-goers know us equally from telecast, literature, and personal contact. Syracuse, New York. Evangelist and World Tomorrow presenter Ron Kelly conducted public Bible lectures for Plain Truth subscribers and telecast viewers July the 30th and 31st here in Syracuse. On the first night, Mr. Kelly spoke on world conditions to 51 subscribers, who he said were very enthusiastic and responsive. The second night, only 26 attended because of stormy weather. He spoke the second night about the church. Asking for a show of hands as to how those present learned about the church, whether through the telecast, literature, or another person, the group responded in about thirds on each category. Those attending Brides Through Literature met Syracuse pastor Randy Bloom, his wife Debbie, and Mr. Kelly's wife Norva, and visited with members. Three follow-up Bible studies were to be conducted later. Fires blaze in Northern California. No members suffered injuries or property damage from blazes in Northern California in late August. The daughter of a member lost her home in Round Mountain, but she was fully insured, and area brethren have been responsive to her needs. The Chico and Redding churches donated clothing, canned goods, toiletry articles, and other commodities for the fire victims in their areas. Tasmanians mark Hobart's 20th. Hobart, Tasmania. The church here celebrated its 20th anniversary, July the 18th, with a dinner and dance. Jerry Barber, newly ordained local elder, and his wife Elizabeth cut an anniversary cake. From our scattered brethren, countries in contrast, Malaysia and Singapore. Doing the work offers some great challenges for Yong Shin Ji, pastor of the Johor Bahru and Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia churches. Because Malaysia is a Muslim country, we are not allowed to do what the government considers proselyting the Muslim people, he explained. According to the Constitution, we legally have the prerogative of practicing religious freedom, but there are certain regulations that need to be observed for public order. For instance, the law says that police must grant a permit before the church can conduct a meeting in a public place. Ethnic tastes. Most of Malaysia's population are ethnic Malays and Chinese, with a sizable Indian minority. Singapore's population is mainly Chinese, with large Malay and Indian minorities. In Malaysia, 111 people attend church in Kuala Lumpur, and 45 attend in Johor Bahru, of those in attendance, nearly half are children. Because Mr. Young is the only full-time minister in the area, members don't have Sabbath services to attend every week. On average, the Johor Bahru and Kuala Lumpur churches meet 3 out of 4 Sabbaths a month, although the 30 members in remote regions of Malaysia and Indonesia can't regularly attend Sabbath services, most can attend occasional Bible studies. Mr. Young visits one of the 4 outlying Bible studies each month. Although Singapore and Malaysia are neighboring countries, Mr. Young said the lifestyles in the two nations are vastly different from each other. Economic differences. Singapore's economy is mainly manufacturing, and Malaysia's is primarily agricultural. Singapore is cosmopolitan and fast-paced. Malaysia is mostly rural and slow-paced. Because Singapore is a small country and public transportation is efficient, brethren can see each other often and maintain close relationships. Fellowship in Malaysia is more difficult. The Malaysian brethren are scattered more, and public transportation is not very good, Mr. Young said. They are seldom able to get together outside of Sabbath services, except for a church picnic every couple of months or so. Few Malaysian brethren can afford to socialize often, although the economy is starting to pick up. Singapore has little or no unemployment. In fact, in the past few years, the country has had to import laborers from the Philippines, Malaysia, India, and Sri Lanka. Rent takes half of wages. The cost of living is quite high in Singapore. For most people in Singapore, more than half of their wages goes for rent. It's tough for a couple to survive financially unless both the husband and wife work, said Mr. Young. It is not uncommon for people in both countries to work 6 days a week. The year's high point for members is the Feast of Tabernacles in Malaysia. In addition to fellowshipping with each other, brethren appreciate the opportunity to meet brethren from around the world and show them our countries, Mr. Young added. Member reaps rewards of determination, study, and hard work. Tucson, Arizona. Determination, good study habits, and perseverance paid off for Lupita Maldonado, a member here, when she received a $1,000 scholarship from Sroptimist International of Desert Tucson, a professional women's service organization. Mrs. Maldonado was born in Canea, Mexico. In 1976, she moved to the United States, where the English language didn't come easy for her. But she became a U.S. citizen and was baptized in 1986. She attends the Tucson congregation with her husband John and their 3 children, Christina, Danny, and Clarissa. She plans to attend the University of Arizona at Tucson. This completes the reading of the Worldwide News for Tuesday, September the 22nd, 1992. Your readers have been Dennis Van Deventer, Thomas Hansen, Rick Schallenberger, and Martin Tranquada. These tapes are on loan to you and remain the property of the Worldwide Church of God. Please return them to us within 3 weeks.